Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! You know, we pessimists are never disappointed and sometimes pleasantly surprised. This is one of those days. I don't know if I've ever gone on the air after the Mountaineers have truly stunk up the joint in either a bowl game or a football game, or most notably the NCAA tournament. Dadgummit! Losing 68-60 to Dayton. Don't! This will not consume the entire program, I swear to you, it will not. There are really meaningful, serious things to talk about out there, but don't! 68-60 Dayton. Dayton. Not that I got anything against Dayton. Dayton! But I should have seen this coming when I saw where reporters were asking Coach Huggins, well, how do you think your Mountaineers will fare against Kansas in the second round? If I'd have been Bob Huggins, I'd have gone across the table, and the next one that mentions the second game in this tournament gets it right between the... One of these days, Alice... Oh, God, we suck today. Trailed the entire game. Well, there go my brackets, but that's okay. I didn't have them getting past the second round anyway. So there's some consolation in that. It's not that... I mean, Kansas was going to be next up, so yeah, there you go. At any rate, Dayton. Sorry, just a little, but I'll be all right. It's Friday, after all, and you can bring to the table whatever you wish. There is certainly no paucity of things to talk about this evening. We can start with a true sign of the apocalypse, if you'd like. To wit, Big Eddie Schultz, a report out in the New York Observer. You know, we keep an eye on things like liberal, so-called liberal media. And you have to put so-called in front of liberal media anytime you're talking about Ed Schultz. New York Observer reporting that there are discussions ongoing with Ed Schultz about joining MSNBC on a full-time basis. Well, they were getting so many things right with Keith Olbermann and Rachel Maddow. You know there had to be a big screw-up coming somewhere, didn't you? The Observer reports, and this is a quote, it's unclear what the job would entail. I get the speculation, according to the report I'm looking at, is between the 6 p.m. hour where David Schuster is now and the 10 p.m. hour where there's a repeat of Countdown. Come on, MSNBC. Don't you have that old test pattern thing with the Indian in profile with the war bonnet on in the middle? and the numbers and the weird little things that the TV engineers to calibrate all of his flagitnacks and gizmatics and so forth. Come on, if you can't do the rerun of Olbermann, can't we at least have an hour of that? I mean, that's got it all over Ed Schultz. I sent the story along to Guy James, and I can almost hear the screaming coming all the way from South Florida. Gee whiz. You know, just gee whiz. Oh, and it's Friday, so let's have some fun. Let's go to stupid. Let's play Name That Stupid, as a matter of fact. Let's try this.
Good morning.
How's it going, man?
Oh, it is going great. I had called. I noticed a couple people now talking about the Constitution, and
uh-huh.
I called on the law that they're currently trying to pass in order to tax all of the bonus pay.
Yep.
And I believe it is, I know it's against the Constitution. I believe it's the First Amendment that specifically states that a law cannot be passed to specifically target a person or a group of people.
That's right.
And, we've got a president that supports this, who is supposed to be a constitutional scholar.
Yeah, right.
And my question to you is, isn't this something that the Republican Party can use in order to put towards their side? They can stand up and say, yeah, we don't agree with this. This makes us upset, but we're a party for the people, and we're not going to support something that's unconstitutional.
Well, I think that's a very correct point.
Any ideas? Any guesses? Anybody? Bueller? No, it's not Bueller. Let's try one more time with some convenient stops along the way.
Good morning.
How's it going, man?
Oh, it is going great. I had called. I noticed a couple people now talking about the Constitution, and
uh-huh.
I called on the law that they're currently trying to pass in order to tax all of the bonus pay.
Okay. Let's work with this. We can do this. So the caller is about to opine about the law that would tax the bonus pay. Got that? I mean, we're all following it. We didn't do much last night with the AIG and the bonus thing. I mean, Lord God, Billy Bob, it's all over the place. I felt like it was a lot more important last night to begin the program with the anniversary of George Bush's crime against humanity. But it's out there, and it's twisted, and it's weird, and anyway, so this guy's concerned about the constitutionality of a law that would tax that bonus pay, okay? And let's hear the grounds for his concern.
Yep.
And I know it's against the Constitution. I believe it's the First Amendment that specifically states that a law cannot be passed to specifically target a person or a group of people.
That's
okay. Did you hear that? Now this is a right winger talking. This is what I mean. This is a little master class here. All right, on how eminently, profoundly. Oh, I'm turning into Sylvester the cat. Did you hear that? Profoundly. How, oh, what a gang of just delicious dunderheads the right wing are. I believe it's the First Amendment that specifically states the law cannot be passed to specifically target a person or a group of people. I would appreciate this right winger if he would stop using the word specific. At least he didn't say pacifically, which I've heard right wingers use before. You know, I have a Pacific problem with that. You wouldn't, no kidding. It's the First Amendment that specifically states that a law cannot be passed to specifically target a person or group of people. The First Amendment! Shh. Don't tell the wing nuts. This is the First Amendment. It's really not complicated. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Got that? Now, unless this right way, unless this is just a monumental Freudian slip, this little right winger seems to be under the impression that the First Amendment does that, that a law cannot be passed to specifically target a person or group of people. I think that's called a bill of attainder. Just maybe not. Maybe not. It may be. Who knows? It may be called a ham sandwich. It's been a long time. But a bill of attainder. Yeah, I think so. There's nothing in the First Amendment about that, unless, like I said, it's a monumental Freudian slip in which this little right-winger is now admitting, and I think it may be a Freudian slip. What about you? This little wingnut is admitting that not paying taxes is his religion. Yeah? Could it be? But it's really not about the ignorant little wingnut. It's about the ignorant nut. It's really not about the ignorant little wingnut caller. It's about the ignorant little wingnut answerer. Okay, so just a second's worth of backup.
A person or a group of people.
That's right.
Did you hear that? That's right. The well-heeled, well-paid host of whatever radio program this is. That's right, has just told this ignorant little neo-maxi-zoom-dweeby that the First Amendment contains a clause concerning taxation. And you wonder why we're in the trouble we're in. But you're asking, so what, Bob? There are thousands. I mean, you've told us for every hour of liberal talk, there are 1,000 hours of wing nuttery all across this country. You've told us that, Bob. So what? There's all kinds of ignorant wing nuts all over the air. And all of that is true. 100% correct. But this isn't just any wing nut. Checking the chat room. Anybody getting it? Nope. Nobody still got it. You're going to love this. This is so cute. The guy that goes, right. That's the chairman of the Republican Party. No, I'm not kidding. That's Michael Steele. Michael Steele guest hosted for Bingo Billy Bennett, you know, the guy who said, if you want to eliminate crime in America, just abort all the black babies. Yeah. Michael Steele, a black man himself, guest hosted Bingo Billy Bennett's, you know why we call him Bingo Billy Bennett. Yeah, because that little, you know, thing where he would go and get a high roller suite in a casino in Vegas and sit in a chair with his own private one-armed bandit pumping, you know, $100,000 at a time into the damn thing. And come on, cherries! Ow! Bar! You know, naked, eating Cheetos. Bingo Billy Bennett, yeah. That guy. So, there on Bingo Billy Bennett's morning program, the actual chairman of the Republican National Committee agreed that the First Amendment to the United States Constitution contains a provision relating to taxation. That's right. But wait, first law of holes, when you're in one, quit digging. But Michael Steele's so clueless he doesn't even know he's in a hole. He thinks he's right.
And, we, you know, we've got a president that supports this, who is supposed to be a constitutional scholar.
He is a constitutional scholar, you wing nut. You're not! And apparently, neither is Michael Steele.
Yeah, right, right.
And, my question to you is, isn't this something that the Republican Party can use in order to put towards their side? They can stand up and say, yeah, we don't agree with this. This makes us upset, but we're a party for the people, and we're not going to support something that's unconstitutional.
Well, I think that's a very correct point.
I think that's a very correct point. Oh, Michael Steele, don't quit your day job. No, really, Michael Steele, don't quit your day job. Liberals and progressives, we couldn't pick a bigger bozo to inhabit the office of chair of the Republican National Committee than you. I mean, there are other Republicans who are, in space, no one can hear you scream. But we want you to stay right where you are. In fact, you should probably fill in for Bingo Billy Bennett a little more often. Bingo Billy, after all, he has things to attend to.
On a warm summer's evening, on a train bound for nowhere, I met up with a gambler. We were both too tired to sleep, so we took turns staring out the window at the darkness. The boredom overtook us, and he began to speak. He said, son, I've made my life out of reading people's faces and knowing what the cards were by the way they held their eyes. So if you don't mind the saying, I can see you're out of aces. For a taste of your whiskey, I'll give you some advice. So I handed him my bottle, and he drank down my last swallow. Then he bummed a cigarette and asked me for a light. And the night got deathly quiet. His face lost all expression. Said, if you're gonna play the game, boy, you gotta learn to play it right. You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough to come when the dealing's done. Now every gambler knows the secret to surviving is knowing what to throw away, knowing what to keep. 'Cause every hand's a winner and every hand's a loser, and the best you can hope for is to die in your sleep. So when he'd finished speaking, he turned back toward the window, crushed out his cigarette, and faded off to sleep. Then somewhere in the darkness, the gambler, he broke even. But in his final words, I found an ace that I could keep. You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough to count when the dealing's done. You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for count when the deal's done.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to avoid a song like that when it's in you and it's in the moment. John Fox, where are you when I need you, brother? That's got parody written all over it. On a party bound for nowhere? I mean, come on, it's writing itself, even as I'm sitting here. If I wasn't in the middle of doing a show, oh, and the chord progression can't be much either. Michael Steele, please don't go away. Please, Michael, don't stay with us. Go back on Bingo Billy Bennett's show and give us some more of your constitutional wisdom, please. I mean, when you got that, shows just do themselves. But the nuttery's all over the place. Yesterday, CNBC has gone so just sprayed roach crazy with everything going on in the economic meltdown. Well, let this thing speak for itself, for heaven's sakes. It's Friday. Let's have some fun. Time for the Star Trek computer noise.
Working. Working.
Well, maybe it's been pulled, this audio. There would be a good reason for it if it has. Because, you see, what we're talking about here is evidence of a crime. No, I'm not kidding. Larry Kudlow at CNBC. Maybe you saw this. Larry Kudlow lighting money on fire on camera. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Setting fire to money. You know, one of those dollar bills like I hand out, you know, because I'm such a soft touch when I'm in an urban area and somebody can, you know, man, I need a drink. Yeah. Larry Kudlow set fire to a $1 bill on the set of CNBC. Kind of stunning, isn't it? But it's a felony. It's a federal crime. And he stands sitting there on camera, you know, a little lighter, lights the $1 bill and holds it burning, complaining that President Barack Obama's tax policies will constitute setting money on fire. I wish I was joking. Brother. Let's go to the phones.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
Before I say anything, I'm going to ask you, that cabin that belongs to Ray Rock, I mean, not Ray Rockefeller, was it?
Jay Rock.
Lincoln-esque, or is it McLean-esque?
Oh, it's most definitely McCain-esque. I mean, it's a cabin. It's a cabin the way the Beverly Hillbillies mansion was a, you know, ranch style neighborhood home.
Yeah.
I don't know. He may even have a cement pond. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, more than likely, you know, they can't do without that. There's an old song. It says, "I could cry salty tears."
Mm-hmm.
And I was listening to yesterday's show, the last hour and a half that you had running, you know, earlier.
Yes.
And I think I saw that cartoon that you were talking about.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure
I probably saw it when I was a kid.
I'm sure you did. I mean, I remember seeing it, and it was an older cartoon. It was old when I was young.
Yeah.
But it's a W.C. Field style mouse, and they take huge logs and they bring them into the sawmill, and out comes a toothpick.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's not far off.
No, it's not.
It's not far off. Now the jobs that I've worked on, it's been who you know, and you know, not what you know, what your abilities might be. It's just such a waste. And this whole country needs to change. I want to go back to farming, hemp. You know, when you go to a...
I want to go back to not turning our prime farmland into McMansion fields.
Right. And you know, when you go to a computer lab at a school, you see all this paper. And my God, you know, such a waste of our timber. I mean, the timber could be used for something, you know, extra special. And not so much of it. But the hemp, I mean, we don't need that, and it's not anything to get high on. And besides,
oh no, you could smoke an entire acre of industrial hemp, and all you'd get was a really ugly headache, and maybe smoke inhalation.
Rope. It makes better rope than the nylon or whatever they make rope out of, man-made stuff, and it's just so much to it. And then besides that, to turn down people who are terminal from having marijuana for their pain, as opposed to the drugs that hardly kill the pain anyway and are so highly addictive, is, to me, is just a sin.
Well, I'll take it one step further. I'll go beyond medical marijuana, Juanita. You see the economic meltdown that's happening all around us?
Yeah.
That was done by sober people. On the other hand...
Sober in what way?
Well, sober as in not sitting there rolling a fatty and, you know, getting the munchies.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Maybe the economic...
In the so-called right mind, huh?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Just like... the 8-year mess that predicated where we are right now, that was done by a white guy. Every rotten thing that's happened in the history of the American presidency was done by a white guy.
And yet
white guys the South and white ladies the South, all over the South, I ain't real happy about having black president. He might ruin the country.
Well, I think we should start saying what they've said to us so long. Why don't they go somewhere they like, where everybody thinks alike? How about North Korea? Don't they all just worship their little leader? I mean...
Yeah, you know, maybe they can set up a breakaway nation when George finally moves down to that little farm, that million-acre farm he bought in Paraguay.
Yeah. And you're so right about they want to tell us what to do and what not to do. And they don't even know what they want theirself. They're all confused. Everybody's got different ideas. Nobody's ideas are the same. You know that. You can go from one church to the other. They've all got their own little slant that's a little different. That's why there's different denominations. It's got all that stuff, and you're supposed to adhere to all of that.
Sure.
There's a book that I just happened to see in Amazon. And it was dating Jesus, and then all of a sudden, Buzzflash is putting it up for sale.
Oh, you mean misquoting Jesus?
Huh?
Misquoting Jesus?
No, dating Jesus. This is about a girl who was raised, and I thought about you. She was raised at Church of Christ, and she was taught that, you know, you're supposed to date Jesus, and that you'll never be, a woman will never be right. That only the men can be affected, you know, get sanctified. I mean, And this particular one, I mean, I've known a lot of people in Church of Christ, and some of them really tried to screw me over, you know, trying to get me to go to their place, you know, and all. But I didn't know about a lot of those things that she talked about. But such as that, she was a tomboy, and she had to pretend she was somebody she wasn't. And she did finally get out of it.
Mercy sakes.
And, you know, and she'd always won all the Bible verses things. You know, she won the little crowns and all like that. And, that, you know, that's okay. But, you know, I never heard of that, about only the men could be. That was a new one on me.
Well, I know they can only be sanctified for preaching.
Oh, well, that's, yeah. Did you ever watch the show about designing women?
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever see the one where they're I don't know if she was kin to them or not, but she was a little bit Alzheimer's. She and Paul Lynde, she was kind of like a female Paul Lynde. And she was on that show, and they'd bring her over. And this one girl was going to the Baptist church, and her argument with her pastor was about the women not being allowed to be ministers. And this little lady, that they had it so well written about, I mean, she just said everything, you know, from the Bible and about how, you know, women could be. And I thought it was so excellent the way they wrote it. But anyway, that's another subject. I mean, I didn't mean to get off on that.
Oh, that's okay.
But I was just thinking about how we're all, you know, like in school now. I saw a friend I hadn't seen in a long time yesterday. I was at a doctor's office. And she had moved down here from Wisconsin. She was born down here, and she was raised in Wisconsin, and she was raised in Milwaukee. And she had children the same age as I. She had two boys and a girl. And they came down here, and they got in all kind of trouble in school. Her boys were sent to what kind of school that for bad boys or bad girls, whatever. And
Christian school?
Well, huh?
Nothing. Never mind. Go ahead, please.
But anyway, she said that in Milwaukee, they were taught to disagree with their teachers if they didn't, you know, to question them, and that was considered learning how to think for themselves. Well, down here, you don't do that.
Oh, no.
And they were in trouble all the time.
Not surprised.
And you know, it's true. We're all trained to be little goose steppers.
Yeah, army ants.
Yeah. But, you know, sometimes if I think about it, I think about how this country could be. It'll never be perfect, but it could be such a wonderful country. And people are doing everything they can to get this man out of office. And like I say, he is not a perfect man, and sometimes I'll wonder about him. And then sometimes there's an old song, sometimes he'll say something wonderful. I don't know if you know that song. It's from a Broadway show.
Yeah, that's from The King and I, Something Wonderful.
Yeah.
Something
and,
wonderful.
And, you know,
yeah. I remember.
And
well.
Anyway, he does, to me, he does say things that are absolutely wonderful sometimes. And I don't know. I don't think we need what they call a perfect person in office, because I was told that Bush was perfect.
In every way.
In every way, yes. But I'm just thinking about those kind of a things, you know, and I'm disgusted about those Democrats. We need to get them out of there. And I'm so glad he didn't choose by for his cabinet.
Oh, well.
I've been knowing that for quite a while. And, you know, his daddy was totally different. As far as what I've been told, anyway, what I've heard, that his daddy was a real liberal. And he is just not. It reminds me of those Southern Democrats, or Dixiecrats, whatever you want to call them. that we had in the 2000 election. You remember, if you watched all of that, they say, well, that's a Republican. I mean, that's a Democrat. You know, the judge, that's a Democrat judge. No, it's a sneaky, low-down Dixiecrat. And just like they didn't want to have anything to do with John Kennedy, they worked against him all they could when he came into office. And they didn't even want to be seen in the same room with him. And they weren't worthy to even be around him, as far as I'm concerned. But he did get a lot of things done. You know, it's not known, but he could have gotten a lot more done in his few years if they hadn't have pulled against him. And now, our Democrats, it's not the Republicans I'm talking about these Democrats that include Joe Lieberman, as you said earlier, are trying to keep him from getting anything liberal done. Now, what in the world do they want done? I'm tired of these people. I'm tired of them.
I'm not just tired of them, Juanita. I'm scared of them. And I don't like to say that, but let me just kind of explain myself. I'm not scared of them in the way of, you know, oh, lock your doors. No. This country has got to have, and everybody who's worth his salt or her salt is saying so, this country has got to have profound, meaningful, and there's that word that's getting kind of tiresome, change. We've got to change the way we do business. We've got to change the way we interact with the world. We've got to change the way we interact in our communities. We've got to change the way our communities themselves are structured. We've got to change the way our government functions, or actually dysfunctions.
Totally agree with you.
Those things have all got to happen, Juanita.
Yeah.
But you know what? We've got people in the House and the Senate, and they're not all Republicans, as you note. Low down, dirty Dixiecrats.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to change. And they don't want anything to change. They like everything just as it is. You know why? Because no matter how bad it gets for the rest of us, They're going to, as long as the check cashes, their world is still good.
Yeah.
You know, the Lincoln Town Car limousines are still running up and down the streets in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there aren't as many people in the stores, and people don't have the credit cards to prop up the economy with anymore. And that's a function of the credit card companies themselves trying to make their money on credit card interest and late fees and over limit and all that insane non-business related dishonest sort of hooey. But as far as the government itself is concerned, everything's running like a top. As far as the Evan Bys and the Blanche Lincolns and the David Pryors are concerned, and the Mary Landrews and the Joe Liebermans, everything's hunky-dory. And they're afraid that something will get worse for them if anything gets better for us. And therefore, they resist it all. You know, when you consider how many of them actually represent pharmaceutical companies instead of the any constituencies from, say, you know, Indiana, it becomes abundantly clear what's going on. I mean, there is one fix, and I've been talking about this for years, Juanita. There's one fix. Sometimes this seems like some sort of a vicious cycle and a problem that's circular in nature, where you can't get a handle on any one thing without running into another one. But there is. And thus far, it's the nobody's mentioning it. There's a real easy law. Real easy. No elected representative who is a member of the Congress shall take anything of any value whatsoever from anyone outside of the salary paid them by the federal government. Not a dime. And then all the lobbyists blow away. Because, see, this lesson just got driven into my head this past week, Juanita.
Yeah.
There we were, nearly 150 of us, going up and down the halls of power. None of us had any little bags of money.
Yeah.
None of us had tickets to go play golf in Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
All we had was the honesty, the earnestness, and the dedication and devotion that we brought with us from our homes to see those homes saved. We had those things which the underpinnings of the American Republic presume that anyone petitioning the government for redress of grievances would bring to the process. That's what we had.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? We knew walking in virtually every door we walked in, not virtually every, there are a lot of good people in the Congress. There's just a lot of really, really corrupted ones as well.
Yeah.
But we knew certain doors that we opened, we knew walking in that we were battling something we were fighting. It's like fighting. It's like two knights jousting, and one of them's got a broom handle and the other one's got a lance.
Yeah.
Because we were battling money.
Mm-hmm.
Because, see, the coal companies can come and say, well, you know, that mountaintop removal, that's just, mm-hmm. you know, they're just a bunch of oversensitive hillbillies. Yeah, you know, we're going to put the mountain back to 80% of the way we found it. It's good for the economy, and it brings jobs and national security, so we don't have to depend so much on the foreign oil.
Yeah.
That's good. Now, come here, son. Let me take you to lunch. Yeah, wait a minute. Hey, you know what? I've got reservations at a little cafe in Paris. Come on. We're going to lunch.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't have that. And in a world where venality is a premium value, that meant that we were marching with one foot in the bucket.
Yeah.
But what we had, the purity of our goals, the sincerity of our desires, has got to count for something.
Well, when I say I'm tired, I'm everything. That when I first heard about what they were doing, which I shouldn't have been even felt that way, but I felt like, you know, something walking over my grave or something. It's just, I guess that was a sort of a fear. But I'm kind of glad in a way they're coming out, you know, with what they really are. You know, it's not that we haven't suspected it or knew it about a lot of them. But now, you know, for them to come out in plain view, except some of them aren't, at least you know who your enemy is, in a way.
Yeah.
Am I making any sense?
You're making
but
sense.
But, you know, it's to me, it's better for it to be out in the open. And I don't know. They just... like I said, there's so many things that could be wonderful about this country. And bicycle paths and things like that. Now, down here where I live in Central Florida, we've just got roads coming out of our ears. They're just constantly building roads. You know, they're toll roads, the other kind. And there's so many up in Orlando that I've been with people who are they're professional drivers, and they get lost. You know, you can get on the wrong road so easy, and then you've got to go for it forever before you find a place to get off if you find out where you are. I know one time I turned on a road, and I saw a toll booth, and I wasn't supposed to have a toll booth. And I just said, where am I? Please tell me where I am, because I was just didn't know where I was. And they were kind enough to give me a map and told me where I was, and that wasn't the road I needed to be on, and they let me turn back. They didn't charge me a dime. But then I've talked to Guy, and he said they're not hardly, they need them down there. But for some reason, this part of the state, we've just got them coming out of our ears. And about the time they get them, we're...
Yeah, now, how many light rapid rail systems are under construction in Florida?
No,
that's communism, right?
We don't. Now, when I was little, we had them. What is the name of the one that we have?
Amtrak?
Amtrak, I guess that's the only one down here. But it's not like the old rail systems were. It's just few and far.
Well, wait, there's a monorail in Disney World.
But that's in Disney World. That don't help me.
I know.
You know that for years we voted down here to have a cross-state. I think it was monorail. And then the last time Jeb ran for office down here, he put it back on. They put it back on, and it was voted off. Ha, ha, ha. Just like he was voted off.
Well, you can't be having any of that light rail. That stuff doesn't burn a bunch of oil.
And he said that...
It's bad for Bush family business.
Yeah, and after years, you know, that we wanted it. All of a sudden, we didn't want it. Like you know what I'm saying?
I do know.
After the first few votes came in, he was just so happy. And that was the same thing with the others. So, ha, 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 they all got voted in. But... now, you know, some of the people are talking about it again. Some I've heard, I don't know which congressperson or whatever, but some of them, they're really being thought about it. So I don't know what they want.
I do.
What? I'll buy it. What?
Juanita, you know, I horse around and I kid and I carry on and make funny little voices and stuff. And maybe sometimes that's not such a good thing, because maybe sometimes the reality gets lost and people can't tell when I'm fooling and when I'm not. So let me say this with no funny voices, no dialects, nothing but just rock solid, dead on earnestness. Juanita, I have said before, and I said it last night, that the Republican Party accuses us of the things of which they are most guilty.
Mm-hmm.
They accuse us of being socialists and communists,
mm-hmm.
when they are the ones who cannot act outside of their collective.
Right.
They accuse us of following a messiah in President Obama,
mm-hmm.
when they themselves have made a religion out of Ronald Reagan, who just about destroyed this country,
mm-hmm.
who laid the groundwork for the later harm done by George W. Bush. Let me say this very clearly, and I don't want anyone mistaking this for satire or whimsy. The Republican Party seeks nothing short of the collapse of our constitutional form of government,
mm-hmm.
and a full-on autocratic dictatorship. We have learned that Dick Cheney was running Murder Incorporated out of, mm-hmm. his office.
Yeah.
We know what George Bush did with domestic spying. We know from the revelations that were given in January that the Bush administration was spying on it, on the entire political system, the media system, and everyone in between. We know that they seek, at the end of the day, the final obliteration of the Constitution of the United States. There's a reason that the First Amendment has been rendered little more than a life support system for the religion industry. There is a reason that the Second Amendment has been promoted with such bloodthirsty glee by the right wing. I watched a film today. It was Tabasco Dog from the chat room who sent me the link. And it was called Right America. Feeling
right
wrong.
America?
Right America, feeling wronged, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Alexandra Pelosi documentary about McCain voters. And when McCain voters.
Oh, yeah.
And when you watch that, as I did, Juanita, you can't help but come away knowing that those people have no interest whatsoever in this republic based upon principles of democratic representation whatsoever. They are followers of an autocratic leader.
Mm-hmm.
They are racists. They are bigots. They are small-minded. They lack the capacity to think for themselves. They operate out of nothing but fear, anger, and vitriol.
Superiority, too.
And phony superiority.
Mm-hmm.
And the people they are following, who tell them to follow them because, well, I'll keep you safe. Or at least you won't be a communist. You know, when a right winger with no health insurance lays dying, Juanita,
mm-hmm.
do you suppose they sit there and breathe out their last breath thinking, at least I died without socialized medicine? Do their children, when they watch them going untreated for want of appropriate, adequate medical care, do the children say, well, Mama's gone, but she died a capitalist? You know what, Juanita? They do. They really, really do.
Mm-hmm.
They will sacrifice themselves. They will sacrifice, more importantly, others. They will gladly let children go begging for decent medical care. They fought the S-CHIP bill tooth and toenail because it wasn't good for children, but because it was a threat to the insurance companies.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I am not kidding. The Republican Party in America seeks the overturn of our constitutional form of government.
Right.
And I'm not yelling at you. You understand?
No. I do. I totally agree with you. And I don't think that a lot of them realize that they're working against their own self and their children. And they have no comprehension, like you said. They can't think for themselves. And we all need to think for ourselves whether we're right or wrong. You know, we have to come to our own conclusions on our own, not because somebody shoved it down our throat and we're afraid to say different. Back in the 60s, they had a saying that just because you've shut me up, I'm not saying it right, but something like, just because you have shut me up does not mean you have changed my opinion.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I remember when I used to watch Bill Maher, and, you know, people would tell him about the right wings over here, about the right wings, splinter groups, or whatever you want to call them. And he said, but there's not very many of them. Well, maybe that's true, but they can do a lot of damage. They can do a whole lot of damage. And, you know, I'm sure you, same as me, you're raised around a lot of that stuff, too. You know, it's more open. I know it's all over the country, but it's more open in places like these. And, you know, and people don't know we've got terrorists over here.
Yeah, we do.
We had, in fact, one time before, way before 9/11, there was one of the head men of one of those groups down here. He was going to do something to our water system down here.
Oh, there was a. There were right wingers. There were right wingers building bombs all over the country during the 90s, and even into the Bush administration. And every time one of them would get popped, the Bush administration would do everything in its power to keep it from hitting the radar. My God, there was a man busted by accident. You know, the Bush administration law enforcement people didn't bust him because they were out there, you know, diligently working to keep. No. It was entirely by accident because the guy sent the thing to the wrong, whatever he was, sent it to the wrong address. And the guy was planning a cold-blooded mass murder.
Well, they caught this guy, too, but, you know, that's just a for instance. It's not the only ones because they're encouraged to do those things. And just like these people talking on the radio, and it's been going on for so long now, they're stirring up these people that'll do whatever. And that's just the way it is.
And that's the thing. Coming full circle to what we were talking about, Juanita.
And I hope it backfires on them. Now, you know, I'm kind of afraid to say that because a lot of things I say comes back to me. But, you know, the human Juanita, you know, I wish it would backfire on them. And it might.
It may. It may. But there's also a profound risk that the change. See, when FDR started bringing about the changes that were necessary to save the United States during the Great Depression, he was blessed because there really weren't enough Republicans left in Congress to throw a riot in a phone booth. So he was able to get some things done.
Oh, yeah.
But we live in a time when, because of the geographic split in this country, you can count on the South, Democrat or Republican, to get it wrong. Whether it's, you know, hey, Mr. Democratic Senator, does the sun rise in the east? Nope, the north, the south, the west,
yeah.
Not the east. How about you, Miss Republican Congress Lady? Does the sun rise in the east? Nope, definitely the west. The South will get it wrong politically.
Yeah.
Because it is so thoroughly under the sway of both the religion industry and the corporatists. And the people who vote these people into office are kept in a constant state of agitation and terror, and their labor is underpaid, and they are constantly made to worry about where their jobs are going. Look at what we found out a week or so ago. The Alabama Bureau of Investigation, on the verge of announcing a motive for the shooter in South Alabama, suddenly dummied up. Why did they dummy up? Well, the phone rang, and it was Pilgrim's Pride.
Pilgrim's Pride.
Yeah, the chicken processors that had abused the young man and his mother for so many years.
Oh, yeah.
Because that whole bloody escapade was getting ready to be laid on their doorstep. And they said, well, you know, times are tough, and we're trying to figure out which plants we're going to close, and it sure would be a shame for that plant we got down there in South Alabama to get a black eye. We might just have to close. It might just be that one gets closed, and then everybody down there be out of work. Next thing you know, we got another one of these going on. I wouldn't be saying that if I was you. I don't think that'd be very, very smart. And suddenly, the Alabama Bureau of Investigation, crickets.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of announcing a motive, they said, well, we'll probably never know why this happened.
Well, you remember, when the guy blew up and killed a woman, and he planted a bomb and killed a woman in Atlanta when they were having the Olympics of some kind up there?
Oh, yeah.
And they accused that one guy. But anyway, the guy that they finally charged with it, you know, they couldn't find him for years, I think. They didn't find him until after Bush got in. But you know why? I mean, they had almost all the FBI investigating Clinton. They couldn't do anything about anybody else. There wasn't enough of them.
That's true. Well, no, there have been admissions along those lines.
Because they were. There were so many of them.
Right. Well, guess why 9/11 happened?
Because
George Bush had the FBI running around. You know, John Ashcroft had the full weight of the federal government out there going after hookers and Tommy Chong.
And also the people with smoking the marijuana in California, too, remember?
Well, them, too, and the right to die people in Oregon. No, Jesus wants you to suffer all the way to the grave, says John Ashcroft.
Yeah. But, so that's right. You got that right. Anyway. Well,
I'll tell you what, Juanita, this has been a wonderful conversation for a Friday.
Tune in next week, I guess.
Same bat channel, same bat station.
But, you know, Bob, you're talking about things you say, and it sound like they're in jest. And, you know, you have to laugh sometimes to keep from crying. You know that. And you're a lot like I am, and my daddy was, to laugh about. You laugh about the most tragic things in your life. You just. For some reason, you just do. It's just your nature, and but there's a lot of truth in those being funny. You know?
Well, you can hide a lot behind a giggle.
Yeah. Just like you're talking about Bill Hicks, you know, and I mean, these people are great, and they were stupid to take on Jon Stewart. The MSNBC, and they're still talking about it.
And Jon Stewart's laughing all the way to the bank. Hey, look, they're still talking about me.
Yeah.
I win some more.
But they kept on and kept on, you know, and they didn't realize this man has got intelligence and he's got a way of bringing things out in a very unique way. And, you know, he's a comedian.
There you go. Well, Juanita, we will chat some more in the coming week. I think next week's going to be fairly normal, knock wood. I won't be gone off all over creation, but we will chat. And I hope you have yourself a wonderful weekend.
Okay, you too, Bob.
All right, bye now. I got weird internet problems here. I got internet on the streaming computer. I got it on my little laptop over here. And I ain't got no internet on the main production machine, and I don't flippin' know why. So I'm just going to run a tune. We'll take our top of the hour break. I may run two tunes. Who knows? But I'm going to see if I can sort out what the problem is here. And you know, it happened right before the show started. Literally a minute and a half. Someday I'll have a staff and a budget. Someday. No, stop that, Bob. Stop that. So that's where we're going. Hey, listen, it's Friday night. This is the front porch. Somebody bring the jug. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the horn.
Cigarettes and Mrs. Wagner pies and walked on. to look for America. Kathy, I said, as we boarded the Greyhound in Pittsburgh, Michigan seems like a dream to me now. Took me 4 days to hitchhike from Saginaw. I've come to look for America. Laughing on the bus, playing games with the faces. She said the man in the gabardine suit was a spy. I said be careful, his bow tie is really cigarette. I think there's one in my raincoat. We smoked the last one an hour ago. So I looked at the scenery. She read her magazine, and the moon rose over an open field. Oh, I knew she was sleeping. I'm empty and aching, and I don't know why. Counting the cars on the New Jersey Turnpike, they've all come to look for a man.
Yes, we can bomb most any land. On CNN with marching bands. Pour ourselves an ice cold Coke. Make a war. Tell a joke. Yeah. It's all there, all over me. The fear and insecurity.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, we're going to try to keep this going. Sorry about the delay there, but yeah, I need a staff. Still no success. Still no intertubes on this machine. But that will have to come later. And it's about 15 minutes past the hour, and we will try to muddle through as best we can. You are welcome to dial in, of course, you know, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or you can feel free to chime in on your nickel if you've got some sort of unlimited long-distance dialing plan. You can dial 304-658-3333. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello. I'm an 11-year-old kid. I just listened to your radio show and a conversation with Juanita.
Uh-huh.
I didn't even get what you guys were talking about. You guys seem so worried. But you guys are upset about something, but you have what you want. You have a liberal president, a liberal Congress, who's...
Well, okay, okay. Are you a boy or a girl?
I'm a boy.
Okay. At 11, it's kind of tough to tell. I don't mean that as an insult. Let me try. You just made a fundamental mistake. We do not have a liberal Congress. I don't know who told you that. But whoever told you that is lying to you.
We have a Democrat-controlled Congress.
Okay, first of all, okay, son, wait a minute. Let's learn some basic rules, okay? It is not a Democrat Congress. The name of the party is the Democratic Party. As a function of right-wing extremism, the name of the party was deliberately twisted, starting with Newt Gingrich way back before you were born. Okay? We have an ostensibly Democratic controlled Congress. But go ahead.
All right. So why are you guys so worried that we call you Democrat instead of Democratic? We are the Republican Party. We are called Republicans.
Democrats, right. We don't call you Republicans. We don't call you Republicans.
No, I am part of the Republican Party. And
right.
As
I am a part of the Democratic Party.
You are a Democrat. You are a part of the Democrat Party.
No, I am a part of the Democratic Party. Do you not comprehend what I've just told you?
Whatever we want to call it, Democratic.
No, no, not whatever we want to call it. The name of the party is the Democratic Party. If we're going to have a discussion, we're going to have it on realistic terms.
All right.
Okay, so you want to know what we're so worried about?
Yeah, you guys.
Well, let me start with what I'm worried about. I'm worried about a country that takes an innocent child and turns him into a right-winger like you.
I go to public school, and I am one of the very few people who stand against my liberal teachers.
And and what is it that makes your teachers liberal? Who told you that your teachers are liberal?
They did.
They did.
I've had some admit they were Democrats. I had some.
Well, it's okay. Now, wait. Now listen to how you twist the language. Admit they're Democrats?
Yes.
That you don't have to admit you're a Democrat. Okay? It's not something dirty. It's okay to be one. It's even okay to be one and be a school teacher.
I'm trying to prove to you that my teachers are liberal and that they're showing their views in the classroom instead of presenting both sides so kids can...
Okay, well, okay, then tell me what the conservative side of mathematics is. Tell me how you teach liberal mathematics.
You don't teach liberal mathematics.
Right, because there's no such thing. Tell me how you teach liberal spelling.
There's no liberal spelling.
Right, so that's two subjects where you don't have any liberalism being taught
right,
to you.
Now can I say one subject?
Try.
All right, science.
Okay, and what? Tell me about liberal science.
Global warming. See, there's.
Okay, so you're smarter. So you know better than Dr. James Hansen of NASA.
I haven't heard of him, but let me talk. Oh, they're showing global warming in our schools. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So a common misconception is that global warming is caused by CO2 going up into the air, creating greenhouse gases, and the whole Earth gets warmer. But there is actually, if you've seen Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth,
which I have,
CO2 and temperature is the same, but they've also done more research saying that temperature actually comes before CO2, saying that the sun gives off heat, more plants grow, and because of that, more plants die, creating more CO2 in the air.
Okay, and your point? How is any of this liberal or conservative?
Well, that's what they're teaching in schools, is that the man is causing global warming, and it's going to do horrible things to this country.
And you, at the age of 11, are willing to gamble that we're wrong and just keep pumping more hydrocarbons, more CO2, more greenhouse gases into the atmosphere on the very narrow, slim chance that your right-wing ideologues who have been talking to you are correct.
Since I couldn't call you Democratic, can you please not call me a right-wing ideologue?
No, I said right-wing ideologues have been teaching you.
I haven't. My dad has been teaching me. He was a Democrat, fought the issues through, and then turned into a conservative.
That's a pity.
How is that a pity?
Because in order to be a right-winger, You have to deny you have to deny reality on this planet. Tell me what have you been taught about evolution?
What did you just say? What did you
in order
say?
To be
I have to deny reality on this planet?
Yes, you do.
Deny reality. So is the reality that socialism has always worked and always will? No, not give me one example where socialism has worked in our country.
In our country, it's never been tried.
Well, in our world.
In our world, let's see, the medical care systems of Canada, England, Germany, Sweden, Norway, Finland, France, Italy. You want more? Japan. You want more? Now, but see, that's where do all those people go? They go to the hospital in their own countries.
Well, if they can afford it, they usually come to America because they have a free market system that allows people to choose what the best medical system for them is. We don't want the government, who pretends to know what everyone's best health care program is, trying to control whatever the access to health care we have.
Okay, so the government is choosing the best health care for people who are on Medicare.
For everyone, not just on Medicare or Medicaid or Social Security.
No, I'm talking about it in this country. In this country. Yeah, you apparently don't care much for Medicare. I don't, because that's socialism. Son, do you even know what socialism is?
Yes, it's the government control of owning and producing goods and services.
Close.
Okay.
Close.
Close. What did I miss?
It's that aspect of government control.
That's what I meant.
You assume
controlling.
Right, but usually we talk about that. The right wing insists on screaming socialism whenever we talk about everybody being able to go to the doctor when they're sick.
That is socialism.
No, it's not socialism. It's not okay. Well, okay. Let's try some more socialism and see what you think of it. How do you feel about?
I don't want to try socialism.
Well, you already are, and it's working for you. Do you fly to school every day, or do you go on the public roads?
I take the bus.
You ride the public roads. You ride the socialized roads.
All right. There is a certain extent to capitalism where we can't have a pure capitalist, socialist, or communist system. It's just impossible.
So you're giving ground now. You like the socialized roads.
No, I don't. I think private.
You'd like to pay a toll every day to use somebody's private road. You think that would be better for America?
No,
Well, then you like the socialized roads. But we've gone rather far afield. How do you feel about the socialized military?
Socialized military, it's necessary. That's what I said. Then there can't be a pure capitalist, socialist, or communist country.
Okay, so why is it we can socialize a system for blowing away brown people 10,000 miles away, but we can't create a system? This is America. This is the greatest country on earth. We can do anything we want to. Why can't we design a system? Are we just too dumb to design a system where everybody gets to go to the doctor when they're sick? Is that it? Or is America too stupid?
No, we want freedom. We were built on the principles of freedom. We went to
okay,
the
what principles are what? Okay, wait. It's sad. I don't even know what your first name is. What free market principles was this country founded on?
Capitalism. That's it.
Okay, you want to tell me when Adam Smith published The Wealth of Nations?
Adam Smith. What about John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington?
No. They didn't invent capitalism. Adam Smith invented capitalism. Adam Smith invented capitalism. It was first discussed in a book called The Wealth of Nations. Tell me, because right-wingers love to talk about capitalism, but you very seldom find any who have actually read Adam Smith. When did Adam Smith lay out the tenets of capitalism?
I don't know when. I haven't heard about it. It's public school, remember, but...
Right. Oh, I bet those liberal teachers are hiding capitalism from you.
They do show it, but they
Well, here, let me help.
Kidding me.
Let me help. Adam Smith published a book called The Wealth of Nations in 1776. It was barely known about by the time that the Constitution was drafted. In other words, George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, James Monroe, Alexander Hamilton, Aaron Burr, none of the founders of the United States of America.
That they couldn't think for themselves?
None of them were capitalists.
Part of capitalism. There was no start of capitalism in 1776. Cicero, a Roman from about 55 B.C.
Are you talking about Cicero?
Budget should be bound.
Are you talking about Cicero? Or correctly pronounced in his mother tongue, Cicero.
Cicero, whatever.
Yeah.
To the point, I'm referring more to the point and the year. Rather than what you say, Adam Smith in 1776, saying that George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, they all couldn't think for themselves.
No, I didn't say they couldn't think for themselves, son. I said they weren't capitalists. Because capitalism did not exist.
The idea of capitalism exists. Only Adam Smith just called it capitalism in 1776.
All right, now we've run very, very far afield, and I've been quite generous. In letting you change subjects every time I pin you down. But let's go back to these liberal teachers of yours. Let's go back to your original premise. No, let's go all the way back to your original premise. You asked, what is it we're so scared of?
Yeah.
We are scared. We are scared, for starters, of people who twist young minds like yours into the place yours is in. You want to talk about things that you don't have any idea about. You want to talk about capitalism, but you don't even know the origin of capitalism. You seem to think that there is something called liberal science versus conservative science. There isn't. There is one thing. It is called the scientific method. All right? I fear for my country. When right-wingers are out there doing to young minds what they're obviously doing to yours.
All right. No teacher has taught me any of these views that I just presented today.
Right, because you're talking silly stuff. It's not something you would teach. You can't teach that capitalism pre-existed Adam Smith. You can't do it because it's not true. Do you want your teachers to teach you things that aren't true?
I don't want them to teach me things that aren't true. I want them to show both sides of an issue so that
all issues
are able to think for themselves.
Please understand, all issues don't. No. All issues don't have two sides. Two and two only makes four. There's not a special conservative world where 2 and 2 equals 1,000. No matter how hard the conservatives argue that there is.
All right,
there's no other side of that.
There's one issue that faces our nation today that there isn't two sides of. Conservative and liberal. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, can you answer my question?
Yeah, I can. Let's
All
see.
Right, so what is
Is there another side to the issue that free market banksters is there a compelling argument for giving them bonuses for screwing up?
Free market banksters. All right, let's just take this comment one by one. First of all, these banks would not have made these risky loans if they weren't forced to.
No. See, you're wiggling away again. I just asked you the question. Are there two sides to the argument of bonuses for screw-up bankers? Are there two sides to that?
Yeah, there's a yes, they should, and there's a no, they shouldn't.
Okay, and the yes, they should argument is rational how?
That they produced for the company. They actually helped the company out. And because of that, they got paid extra.
But that's not rational because they didn't help the companies. The companies are going down the toilet based on their actions.
All right. There
Let's try another one. Let's try another one. You seem to think there aren't any single-sided arguments.
Do you want me to stay on the same issue, or do you want me to keep wiggling around like you say and getting off every time you pin me?
Well, I just pinned you, so let's try another issue and see if you can score a point. Okay?
All right.
Let's try coal. Now, I don't know where you're from, but give me the other side of the issue where, and I'm not talking about global warming, I'm just talking about what happens when you burn the stuff, the poisons that come out, and when you mine the stuff, the poisons that come out. Give me the other side of the issue of we shouldn't poison people's wells and give them terrible diseases. Give me the argument for poisoning people's wells and giving them terrible diseases. Give me that, please.
There are technologies today that allow...
No, there are not. They do not exist.
I've heard of clean coal.
There is no such thing as clean coal, son. You just wandered... Because it's an advertising slogan. Just like tasty cyanide. Just like tasty cyanide... or fat-free lard. It is an advertising slogan. Now tell me. No. You're wiggling again. You're wiggling again.
That there's also an advertising slogan by reality saying there's no such thing as clean coal.
Because there isn't. See, I live it. I know there's not. I don't speculate on it as you're doing. I know there's no such thing as clean coal. I don't suspect it. I don't believe it. I know it.
You're saying that there's not a single place in the world that's open that has a coal mine in it.
What?
Yeah, that's what I just said.
No, I did not hear you. What did you say?
No.
There's not a single place in the world that's open that has a coal mine in it?
Yeah, without people around so that they try to poison them.
No, there's not. Let me teach you a phrase. We're all downstream, okay? One of the things that coal does most profoundly is toxify water. Water doesn't just lay there. Water seeks its own level. It goes downstream. Okay, do you know what any of the poisons in coal are?
I do not.
Mercury, arsenic, barium, aluminum, manganese, radioactive substances, just to name a few, selenium. All right, these are all called heavy metals, and they are virtually impossible to remove from the body, and they are cumulative. For instance, if we took a hair sample from your dear mother and tested it, there is enough mercury in her body right now to account for a 10-point IQ deficit in you.
All right, so
which may explain your conservatism.
You're saying that in America, the place of freedom that has created a 5,000-year leap in civilization, there's not a single way to produce coal cleanly and not a single way to store it cleanly.
No, there is not.
Really? And you think we can't do that if we really tried?
If we really, really tried, there are technologies for burning coal. Okay? For burning it, that might reduce some of the noxious chemicals in it. But what's left over still has to be dealt with somewhere. Do you follow enough news to know about the East Tennessee sludge dam break back last December?
I haven't heard about it.
Why am I not surprised? That was the after effects of so-called clean coal. It's called fly ash. It has massive concentrations of all of those chemicals that I just mentioned to you. And it has poisoned the ground and the groundwater for generations to come. That's a function of clean, and there's no way to fix it. That's a function of clean coal technology. See, you can't learn. You learn with your ears, not your mouth. When you talk over me, you prove yourself A, rude, and B, unwilling to learn. I'm being very, very gentle because you're young. And I hope you will grow past this stage. But I can assure you that there are children living up a holler here in West Virginia, among other things, whose teeth have been eaten out of their head by the poisons that coal companies have pumped into their water.
Does coal companies have scrubbers?
Yeah, they have scrubbers. Those are on the smokestacks. That's not on the production end. There is no clean way to extract coal from the earth.
Okay. So they couldn't have done it thousands of years ago?
Son, coal was only discovered in, I believe, the 14th century. It was only discovered usefully in the 14th century. The Romans knew of it. They liked to carve little gems out of it. They called it jet. But they did not burn it. Neither was it burned in Asia.
The point is...
Well, you just asked me, could they not have done it somewhere thousands of years ago? I just pointed out that they didn't burn it thousands of years ago. Do you understand?
Okay. Yes.
We began burning coal in at all in around the 15th or 14th century A.D., and we have burned it and burned it and burned it, and we have dumped more and more and more toxins into our world as a result of it. Never mind the global warming. Look at the poisons. See if there's a pro side to poisoning people. And if there is one, I fully expect conservatives, so-called, to try to advance it in the name of corporate America and that free market that somebody's gotten in, that idea that somebody's gotten into your mind. Pardon?
That you're opposed to.
I mean, I don't have to be opposed to it. It failed. Okay? Okay?
It failed?
Yeah. You were three years old when you... See, you're talking and not learning again. You were three when George Bush took the helm of government. All right? In those 8 years, between your third birthday and your 11th, massive harm was brought to this country by his economic policies and the so-called free market. All right? I don't have to believe or not believe in the free market. The free market is not Tinkerbell. What we do on this program is we know things, or we don't know things. We don't do believing, because believing is dangerous. All right? Now, those free markets that you're talking about, I don't have to believe in them or not. All I have to do is look at their effects. And the free market economics that begin with that are most cogently, if you can use that phrase, word, most forcefully argued, beginning with Milton Friedman, have been given their head. They've been let run wild for the last 8 years, and that's how we got where we are. No matter what some right-wing ideologue tells you, it wasn't Barney Frank, it wasn't Nancy Pelosi. It wasn't Bill Clinton. It was full steam ahead, right-wing, free market, here's a big phrase for you, anarcho-randianism. One of the reasons you don't know about Adam Smith and the Wealth of Nations is because most people who call themselves conservatives and capitalists are actually followers of the principles set forth by a disaffected Russian emigre author named Ayn Rand. And they don't know the first, and they don't know the first thing about the Wealth of Nations. You sound like you have an urge to learn, and I respect that. I strongly suggest, and I'll bet you from the sound of your vocabulary, I'll bet you you could comprehend it. I want you to actually go and read what other people are talking about and don't read. I want you to go and read Adam Smith's The Wealth of Nations. That is where capitalism begins. And what you'll find is that the capitalism as described by Adam Smith bears no relationship whatsoever to what is called capitalism in America today.
No relation whatsoever?
None.
None at all.
In Adam Smith's capitalism, everybody, this might sound like communism, so, you know, look out. Everybody shares the risk in a business venture. The guy who sweeps up the shop.
Take the risk.
The guy who sweeps up the shop shares the risk with the guy who builds the stuff, who shares the risk with the guy who owns the company. Okay? And if the company goes bust, they all go bust. And if the company succeeds, they all succeed. That's not America, is it?
Yes, that is America.
No, that isn't America. Not when. No, wait now. That's not America. That is not America when you consider that the guy who sweeps the floor gets thrown out of his job. The guy who makes the stuff gets thrown out of his job when the factory moves over to Kuala Lumpur or wherever. But what happens to the guy at the top? Why, he floats away with bonuses and stock options and a golden parachute. Do you think that if General Motors goes under, that the CEO of General Motors is going to lose everything just like the guy who works on the production floor or the guy who sweeps the floor? No. So there's your homework. Go and read Adam Smith's The Wealth of Nations.
Okay.
I think you'll be surprised. I've enjoyed the conversation. I got to run along. Take care. And for your sake, I hope you get well. Bye now. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program. Oh, sorry. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Cassie.
Hey, Cassie.
How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. How are you?
Good. The boy who just called you.
Yes.
I thought that I was being misinformed that he was really rude to you.
It's the way right wingers are, Cassie. It is.
Well, I don't know. I felt bad every time he would say something rude and not say sir or say, you know, not say please and stuff like that. I thought that was.
Manners are not the right wing's strong suit. You got to understand, this young man has probably been raised on a steady diet of screamers like Michael Savage and Rush Limbaugh and Hannity and that whole dirty crowd that gets on the air and does nothing but lie for hours on end. What you just heard is what happens to the innocent mind of a child when all you do is lie to him.
Yeah. Do you think he'll go and look for the book that you recommended?
Not a chance. He'll ask someone, and they'll say, oh, well, you know, Adam Smith said, and that'll be good enough.
Yeah, or someone will tell him, no, capitalism goes back to this century, and he'll...
Right, capitalism was invented by the Romans. Sure, why not?
Well... In my school, I actually heard a teacher say that you can't have democracy without capitalism.
I'm not surprised.
I know it's not true.
No, it's not. It's proven by time itself. There was no such thing. Come on, Cassie. Who invented democracy? I know you know this one.
The Greeks.
Yes. And Adam Smith published his Wealth of Nations when?
in the 1780s,
1776, yeah. So that means that the Athenian democracy was developed, 2,100 years before Adam Smith invented capitalism?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And democracy didn't include women then either. But
very true.
That's a whole different problem.
Right. There's a lot of things that democracy doesn't include, and it is well to note that Plato despised democracy.
Yeah.
Because it
he thought people were too stupid to have.
Well, not just that. It killed the most brilliant man of his age and the man who was his mentor, democracy did. A bunch of people who said, well, you know, that Socrates, he's corrupting the youth. Drink this. And they killed Socrates. The democracy did.
Yeah. But the other thing, I get comments on my blog sometimes where people say, but this isn't a democracy, it's a republic. And it's like, that doesn't mean that, you know, George Bush and Dick Cheney can be violating the Constitution, which is what I was saying in the first place. But they just focus on the fact that I said it was a democracy. And they're like, it's not a democracy, it's a republic, so you're wrong.
Right, and the thing is, it is not a democracy within the true sense of the word. A democracy, as invented by the Athenians, everybody participated. If there was the trial of Socrates, was the jury pool was all the men of Athens.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they had other structures. They had the ecclesia. They had their archons, but the democracy itself was a popular assembly. Kind of well, the best example of pure democracy in the United States, Cassie, is in places like Vermont, which if it wasn't so doggone cold, I would be tempted to move to. They have their town meetings, and everybody participates. Everybody participates over fixing cracks in sidewalk to even resolutions demanding the arrest and prosecution of George Bush.
Well, that's good. I mean, it's good that they have that.
Oh, yeah, and isn't it interesting that it happens in New England and not in, say, Mississippi? Why do you suppose that is?
Because in Mississippi, it would be too racist to let all of the everybody's participate.
Not just that. New England has a strong individualist tradition, among other things, history-wise. Very few people, we talk about the things that led up to the Civil War, and South Carolina was muttering about secession way back into the Andrew Jackson administration. But that individualist tradition reared its head in New England. New Hampshire was the first state in the Union to start, to start talking about secession, and it was advanced by a man named Daniel Webster early in his career. But that individualist tradition has strong, deep roots in New England, whereas the South developed along authoritarian lines, where there was a big, rich boss man, and there were lots of non-wealthy people, whites, underneath them, who answered to his whim and his desires. And then before the Civil War, there was an underclass of African slaves.
But like a plantation kind of mentality?
Precisely. And it persists to this day.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. In Texas, there's a whole lot about independence and stuff and people thinking independently, but it's all talk.
Right. It is. All of that, and all over the American West.
Think about that.
Yeah, all over the American West, that business about rugged individual hauling myself up by my bootstraps. See, that young man wanted to talk the silly right-wing talking points about socialism. But all those right-wing farmers that live out in the West. I'm a rugged individualist, right? Remember? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well. they only have farms because of socialized federal water projects that deliver them water with which to irrigate their crops.
Yeah. Well,
oopsie.
Bob, and ask him to pay for him to ride a school bus, and who pays for his books, and who pays for his desk at school, and who pays the teachers. And
oh, the liberal teachers?
If he said he's in public school, that's socialized education.
Yeah, it kind of is, isn't it?
That's what public school is.
Yes. And you know, that was envisioned by that noted capitalist.
Thomas Jefferson.
Yes. Who, of course, wasn't one. But let's not let that get in the way of the right-wing myth.
Yeah.
I wasn't trying to be mean. Cassie, I wasn't trying to be mean to the young man. I hope I didn't come across that way.
No. No, you were way more patient than anybody in the chat room. You don't even want to know what the people in the chat room were saying about him.
I wish I could be in there. But something in my computer has gone to its long home or its just reward or whatever, so I can't get in the internet right now. It's really annoying. Trust me.
Not bad.
Yeah, but see, this is so easy for me, Cassie, because I've got you, who looks at the world with open eyes and deals with reality, and you make me feel good about my future and the future of my family. Whom I think you probably would share a lot in common with.
Well, yes.
But then I get smacked upside the head. Oh, Cassie, doggone it. Then I get smacked upside the head with the knowledge that there are right-wingers out there that are making sure that even the next generation won't be able to fix what's wrong in this country. I was sent an article that Mike Malloy read on the air by a man named Robert Freeman, I believe, called America's Weimar Moment. And it's very true. If I could pull it up, I'd read it again, even though Mike already read it and most of you guys listen to Mike. We're at that moment. And because Republicans and conservatives put politics before everything, and power above all, there is a strong likelihood that Barack Obama's administration will not be able to accomplish many of its goals, whether he's here for one term or two. And they will be enabled, those right-wingers, by mugwump Democrats like Evan Bayh, and Blanche Lincoln, and David Pryor, and Mary Landrieu, who get some things right, but if you get a lot of little things right, but you get the really big things wrong, guess what you come out being? Wrong. And I don't know that it's in the short term, but in the long term, it spells the doom of this country. And that gives me a sense of sadness I cannot verbalize, because that's a doom that falls not on me, but upon my children and upon theirs. That's a doom that may well fall upon a pair of little ones in playpens in this house. And the horror and grief that gives me cannot be fully expressed. Let's keep this going. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Ed.
How are you doing?
I'm holding on for dear life.
I never heard such a bunch of crap. You know who's to blame for that kid, and it's a shame because his mind is so good, but they've got it in the gutter so bad that it'll never do any good. And his dad needs a foot in his ass, quite frankly. What a lame brain. When they said, what a shame to waste a mind, what his dad has done to him, or his mother, one, But those parents ought to crawl under a damn rock if they haven't already. I'm sorry about the...
No, that's okay. It did.
Loose talk to, but that just burns me up to see a kid like that, that is absolutely might as well took his brain out and put a damn bowling ball in his head. And they had one on television, 14 years old, dressed like a typical little Republican or a conservative or whatever you want to call them, Nazi. And he had the same routine and was brilliant in his presentation of what they are. But what these kids don't know, they don't know Adam Smith and 1776. They don't know that George Washington and Abraham Lincoln were the kind of Republicans that moderate Democrats are today. Those people would be ashamed of the Republican Party if they were here to see what goes on. And it just burns me up that, and you know what? I'm so aggravated that I forgot what I wanted to talk about.
It'll have that effect on you, Ed. I tell you what, you want me to put you on hold and come back to you in a little bit?
Yeah, that'd be a good idea, because right now, you know, I just like that. Where was them people from?
I have no idea.
I wish they would listen and call back in and tell me where they want to talk to them. You know what I mean?
But, Ed, you can't.
Well,
you can't
understand the type of talk I'm talking about.
Oh, well. Ed, I'll put you back on hold. Stand by, brother.
All righty.
All right. It's our buddy, Ed. And let's see who comes next. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Preston.
Hey, Preston.
I just got finished listening to the audio version of David K. Johnston's Free Lunch.
Yes.
The subtitle, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill.
Right.
And he quotes Adam Smith a couple of times. And one of the quotes is something like, they are two businessmen getting together for lunch when they're not conspiring to do harm to the general public. And he had a lot of insights like that. And he actually was more proud of the work he did on the theory of moral sentiments, which completely flies in the face of this other sort of attitude they try to cultivate.
Well, that's my whole point, Preston. I have read cover to cover more than once The Wealth of Nations.
Mm-hmm.
All this babble that gets foisted off on a credulous, unsuspecting America who needs nothing more than to have their worst fears radicalized and activized, you know, Hannity, Savage,
yep.
That dirty bunch.
Yep.
Adam Smith bears no relation to what they call capitalism. Everything that gets called capitalism by wingnut radio and wingnut TV is nothing but, and I can't remember who to credit with this, it might be our buddy Reverbo, anarcho-randianism. Okay?
That's good. Yeah, that's real good.
Because, and I think it was Reverbo, maybe it was someone else, who I'm not trying to give credit where, but anyway. If you want to see full-on free market capitalism in action, go to Somalia. Because capitalism rules the day there.
Yeah.
Strong men with bodyguards struggling against other strong men with bodyguards and no government interference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, the only hope you have, even for the strong men, you know, they all realize that sooner or later they're going to get gunned down in a hail of bullets.
Mm-hmm.
But their only hope is to come out on top. And it's almost impossible to fly under the radar there. The only way you can fly under the radar is to be so poor and so insignificant as to be beneath notice. And even then, that just means that they can come and put a bullet behind your ear on a whim, or just starve you to death.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's not Adam Smith capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
That is anarcho-randianism.
Yeah, that's a good term for it. I agree. And, you know, that's another thing that people like Cassie will run into, people who have read, you know, a lot of Ayn Rand and just kind of hold her up there on an altar.
Oh, and yeah, and let me make this correction real quick. I just got a note on the machine that I can read from Ben Birch. He's the Somalia guy, and he's absolutely, you know, Ben's a genius. And his analogy is spot on.
Yeah. I mean, this discussion of the economy is so deceptive in so many ways. I mean, the suggestion that it's individualism, and they want government out of the way, and people will call in and parrot the host and see no irony in that they are working for the government sometimes, or they have a business because they get government contracts.
Or they have a farm because they get government water.
And subsidies and all sorts of supports. Tom Hartman actually is great on this issue. He tells that story of the anti-government guy getting up, taking a shower in the water provided by him by his government, you know,
right.
Public water supply, gets in his car and drives on the road built by the government, the dreaded government, on and on. You know, part of this deception is to build a political climate, a communal climate where private interests can take it over.
Right. That's the ultimate goal of the Republican Party. And they may be able to achieve it, Preston, simply by continuing to oppose anything that would save this nation as we know it. The ultimate goal is to cause the collapse of our constitutional form of government and turn it over to nothing but pure predatory practice, the Somaliization of the United States of America.
Yep, and it's profoundly anti-democratic. You know, there again, there's that line that Cassie's message board, you know, blog contributors were saying that, hey, we're not a democracy, we're a republic. So they've absorbed this attitude that, you know, that you want to hotly deny democracy. God forbid you're democratic. Oh, no, no, we're a republic. Damn it.
Right. Well, you know, the young, at 11 years old, Preston, at 11 years old, that man, that young man has already absorbed the meme of calling us the Democrat Party.
Mm-hmm.
At 11.
Who was this?
No, the young man, well, the young man who called just the last 30 minutes of conversation.
You know, to be honest, I actually missed that. I just kind of got.
Well, you
got to
go back and hear this in the archives because you'll have your head in your hands, Preston.
I will definitely do that. And, you know, but I'm so glad he called in, though. And I hope he calls back and maybe, you know, there may be room to talk again.
I gave him a homework assignment of going and actually reading Adam Smith.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's another thing we run into also when we approach people who have been brainwashed, basically. And that is, you know, beyond the political arguments, there's something profoundly psychological and emotional going on in that, you know, they've invested their emotions and their identity into this cult. And how do you bring someone out of a cult? And I guess the Church of Scientology, the people who really got into that, they had a term for the people who didn't believe in their theories, the Scientology stuff. I forget the term, but...
No, I've heard it too, and it's something that's not a word, but...
Right. It's like some made-up thing like flams or something like that.
Yeah, flam dips or, yeah.
But it's very similar to what Rush Limbaugh has developed. Their term is libs, you know, from the liberal.
Yeah.
And libs, and dismiss them because they're not part of this group think going on. And there's a lot of stuff going on there that it's difficult to break out of. They may even see the politics and not want to see the political truths. Because it's upsetting. You know, it's upsetting to think you lost control of your mind and that people that you trusted are lying to you every day. There is somebody, a friend of mine at work, her daughter is at a public school
yeah, we fight this stuff at every turn. Like I mentioned last night, Preston, we're going to be battling tooth and toenail because there are boards of education in this state that want to insert a clean coal curriculum into the fourth grade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, because see, the other side are willing to use children. They are, and it's very important that they do. After all, was it Hitler who said, "Give me the children, and I'll take the country," or some such? Yeah. I'm paraphrasing, but you know, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world.
Mm. Wow.
And the willingness, you know. I don't know where the young man goes to school, but he's upset that he's in the public socialized school system, and he's mad at his teachers for being liberal, and he's mad at his teachers for not teaching him conservative, you know. And I sat there and said, "Tell me about the conservative spelling. Tell me about the conservative the mathematics." Well, they're teaching me global warming, and they're liberals.
Yeah, you know, the library is another kind of socialized, dreaded socialist experiment.
Right, and that's why the right wing constantly fights against library. You know, we can't have that knowledge laying around there where people can just get their hands on it.
Yep. You know, the Postal Service, it's a community effort, one that they've been encroaching on more and more, privatizing. Thomas Jefferson, in one of his late letters to a friend of his, said that remark about how I hope we shall crush in its birth the aristocracy of our moneyed corporations, which dare already to challenge our government to a trial of strength and bid defiance to the laws of our country. And
wow, Jefferson said that?
Yeah. Yep. People can find the exact quote if you like Google Thomas Jefferson and, you know, the moneyed aristocracy of our corporations or something like that.
And see, that's, you know, we already hear and see the profound opposition. You know, if Barack Obama came out and said, "I want every American to have chocolate," there would be a right-wing backlash. If Barack Obama came out and said, "I don't want anybody in America to die in a house fire," there would be a Republican backlash. Okay? Barack Obama is hamstrung to a certain extent because by virtue of the fact that he is a dark-skinned American, he has to be twice as good as any American president. He has to be FDR, John F. Kennedy, and Batman all rolled into one before he gets any credit.
Yep. And so often, you know, we're projecting so much on him. And when so often we need to talking about governing ourselves more often than
Preston. I was in a cab in D.C. not too long back, and man, I love D.C. cabbies. Awesome people.
A lot of North Africans, I imagine.
East Africans, Eastern Europeans. Everybody drives a cab in D.C. and the funny thing, you know, they're accountants. They are people who were doctors in another country. You know, that's how we do our refugees here. But they're driving cab in D.C. And so, you know, I love making just idle conversation with these guys as we're driving around. And one of them, I said, "Well, are you feeling better?" Because, you know, he's been in America a good long while. He's here. And so, you feeling about America, better about America now that Obama's in the White House? And he said, "I don't know." He said, "We want so much of the man. I am of the opinion that we elected a president and not a magician." And I don't know if America understands that.
I loved Obama's... Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I loved his remark, Obama's remark last night on Leno about how, you know, we're kind of like American Idol, but everybody's Simon Cowell. And kind of addressing the kind of hyper criticism that, you know, we're trained to have, and how counterproductive it can be.
Exactly.
You know, real quickly, regarding what Kathy hears about we're republic, not democracy, you know, when I run into stuff like that, it's hard to, you know, it's kind of a canard in a way.
Oh, it surely is.
Okay. And, in fact, there's a right-wing radio host here named Mike Rosen who uses it regularly. And then you move on to the next subject. You just plant that in your head, in the person, your listener's head, make democracy this bad thing, da-da-da. You know, in response, once in a while, in fact, I called him one time. I called him on it, and I said, you know, in many ways what we actually are is a plutocracy. You know, if you want to really get down to it, rule of the rich. So that kind of, and also a corporatocracy. John Perkins, who wrote that book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Yes.
He uses the term corporatocracy. He's actually seeing quite a movement in his own work. When he first started to do his work, first, you know, he wondered what sort of forces were going to come down on his head. Because he knows firsthand, you know, what sort of force these people can use at times. But it was his daughter, actually, who convinced him that he had to write that book for the sake of the collective humanity. And when he first started speaking about it, you know, pretty small crowds, lots of criticism, dismissals. And now he's speaking to crowds of 1,000, 1,500 people in all sorts of different classes of our society. You know, that book was a bestseller on the New York Times for like 50 weeks. It's a sign of a movement taking place, a change of consciousness. And a lot of people aren't as familiar with the work he does with indigenous people. He's written a couple books on traditional knowledge, and one book is called The World is As You Dream It. And he spent a lot of time with the Shuar in Ecuador, and people who are waging their own land struggles. As I'm speaking with you right now, Bob, in the background I have on Link TV, which is airing a Greg Palast documentary about Chevron in Ecuador, the havoc they've wreaked upon those societies and those ecologies. But again, it's also a story of incredible resistance, and they're getting lawyers and they're getting lawsuits together and they're getting publicity. Anyway.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
Well, I also wanted to mention, you know, the parallel struggles regarding coal. Noam Chomsky's daughter, Aviva, has been going to Colombia a lot, and working with peasants and farmers and indigenous. And apparently, Colombia is the largest foreign supplier of coal to the U.S.
Wouldn't surprise me in the least, because and we know what the Colombian coal fields are like. We know by virtue of the lawsuit filed, it was unsuccessful. But it was unsuccessful for legal reasons, not for factual ones. The Colombian coal fields are killing fields, where anyone attempting to, or, well, it's like the 1890s and early 1900s up into the 20s here. You try to organize a union, you get dead.
Yeah, and that's another subject that Obama has been courageous on. And he has said what's been needed to be said about how, you know, the Colombian government supporting military is killing labor organizers. You know, that there it is, and we need to keep saying it ourselves. You know, you want, there's where he does provide leadership. He put it out there. Can we kind of pound the drums back? You know, there's a call and response that needs to go on here. But again, the resistance is holding up some projects. And speaking of Obama and changes going on, I read this wonderful article in E! Magazine, and it's in a couple other places on the web, regarding Obama's daughters and the school he's going to, which is called Sidwell Friends. And Friends, those are always Quaker schools. and a really remarkable place, apparently. And the Quakers actually won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1947 for the work they did with refugees from both sides of the conflict. And apparently the school is one of the leading green schools in the country. It has like this solar chimney, it has a rooftop garden, it has this water recycling and filtration system that's remarkable.
Yeah, and even if there is no such thing as global warming, how is any of what you just described bad?
Right, exactly.
How is that not a better way to do business?
That's right. And even if people, you know, sometimes we'll run into people who you will not get very far regarding global warming. And it's like, and some battles I do kind of step away from at times, you know, it's can be like hitting your head up against a wall. But we can put aside those articles about greenhouse gases, and we can look at the deforestation, the soil erosion, the oceans are dying, and on and on and on. You know, let them have their clean coal curriculum in the schools just as long as we can follow it up with a you know, deforestation and mining curriculum, and, you know, we can, the acidification of the oceans, you know, all these greenhouse gases, they're not all going up into the atmosphere. Apparently the oceans are absorbing them and acidifying the water and creating, you know, problems for sea life. Yeah, there's a whole range of issues, regarding the environment, and, so to see the youth, to see people like Obama's daughters, they're being called something like sustainability natives. That is, they're growing into a sensibility of respect for the earth.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, when I saw the 12,000 young people that descended on Washington, D.C. for Power Shift, I can't help but come away hopeful, because there aren't 12,000 conservative kids who can counter them.
Right.
I mean, that's my hope. That's the thing that keeps me out of the, you know, complete just miserable doldrums.
Right. Or, you know, if they can get a big rally going, it's because of a lot of incentives that they make and, you know.
Yeah, we're at the 6-year mark as of last night. It was this time 6 years ago when young and old alike were gathering all over the country to burn records and to holler, USA, 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 and demand that more brown people be slaughtered in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they can gather for. Conservatives, Republicans can always find a reason to gather together to advocate for murder and death and killing and slaughter, especially of people who aren't quite as white as they are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, liberalism didn't give us Mr. Adkisson in Tennessee. Sean Hannity did. Bill O'Reilly did. Michael Savage did.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, liberalism doesn't give us all the myriad Protestant ministers who get caught up in kiddie rape stings.
Mm-hmm.
Liberalism didn't give us the Christian radio host in Nashville who was busted with thousands and thousands of kiddie porn files on his computer. Liberalism didn't give us the BTK killer in Kansas. He was a registered Republican who never missed a primary, was a Cub Scout leader and a lay leader in his church, and a devout conservative. And he called himself BTK because he liked to bind and torture and then kill.
Mm-hmm. Liberalism has given us people like Marianne Wright Edelman, the founder of the Children's Defense Fund, a remarkable person.
Liberalism gave us Helen Keller.
Yeah.
You know, the woman was a socialist.
Yep.
And not one, who was hiding her light neath a bushel. She said profoundly strong things when it came to sending our youth over to fight a war based on, for all intents and purposes, nothing but naked capitalism in Europe in 1917.
Mm-hmm.
And she did not mince words.
Nope. That's,
you know,
for sure.
It gave us people who said things like, when fascism comes to America, it will come wrapped in the flag and carrying a cross.
Yep.
Truth, you know, absolute truth that we saw carried out in its full toxic glory in the last 8 years.
You know, liberalism gave us Hillary Clinton, who was a big ally of the Children's Defense of Lawyering work for that group. Hillary, when she was in college, she donated time to a group that, you know, went to the homes of kids. And, you know, she was finding kids who had had cigarettes, you know, on their skin, hadn't eaten for days. A lot of stuff she saw traumatized her, and she'd come back and weeping. Bill Clinton tells the story. And so when she was at Yale Law School, Hillary Clinton wrote up a piece about children's rights. And this article that she wrote actually became kind of like a touchstone argument for the children's rights movement, which I didn't even know there was such a thing, to be honest. And also, when you hear the right wing talk about children's rights, they hate the idea of it. And they always use these stories about, you know, kids who are, you know, being manipulative themselves and, you know, kind of, you know, and there are instances like that. But they're ignoring purposely the general thrust of the need for young people to be respected as human beings. And to have some degree of autonomy and to, to let them call people, to let them know of resources in case they're being abused. Right wing doesn't want that because they're going off to the American Republic sexually exploiting children and doing it in other places as this free market that they foist on the world totally destroys communities and local economies, and people are desperate for survival, and that's how, you know, the right-wing elite wants them, desperate for survival.
And for all of their prating of their Christianity, you know, I remember Hannity saying that torture is consistent with the teachings of the Prince of Peace.
Mm-hmm.
They I'm not one of those people, so I'll just, you know, I'm just commenting on it objectively. They right by that part in St. Paul where he says, we held all things in common for the common good. You know, that's socialism. That might be communism. That might be where Marx found that.
That's right. Hannity, I think just today, he brought up again how Obama said something about, you know, it spread some of the wealth around. And he just says, Hannity goes on and on. Oh, see, Obama, Karl Marx. He's leaving out Luke. In the book of Luke, there is that phrase about spreading the wealth, holding it in common. Hannity is, it's anti-Christian, totally. It is a co-optation of the narratives of the Prince of Peace. It's a co-optation of Adam Smith. You know, they take these bits and pieces from these figures and try to co-opt their stature. It's amazing. And I told a friend of mine, I recently suggested it's satanic. And he didn't like that term because it was too metaphysical or something for him. But while we were speaking, I looked up the word Satanism. And there is the kind of metaphysical definition of the word, but there is kind of a political definition. Let me see if I can find it really quickly. Satanism. First, I think that there's this pentagram symbol, and then we've got this pentagon symbol and institution going on. But there's also... There's something something else really intriguing about this Wikipedia definition. Okay, others regard the biblical Satan as an allegory that represents a crisis of faith, individual free will, wisdom, and enlightenment. Modern Satanism can in general be categorized under two broad types, theistic Satanism and atheistic Satanism. You know, theistic Satanists talk about a supernatural deity who some can consider to be entirely benevolent. In contrast, I'm sorry, I'm still not finding the exact section. I might have to get back with you on that. There's a reference to Ayn Rand in this definition of Satanism, and I don't know.
Well, it works for me. I mean, I've read her gosh awful, and the thing, the writing's not, you know, that's not writing, that's typing. The writing's not even any good. But
okay,
go ahead.
You're right. I don't think the writing's very good. Did you ever see the movie The Fountainhead? Or?
Oh, yeah. And I know the story behind it. Ayn Rand almost crashed the production of the entire film because she insisted that Gary Cooper repeat her painfully long monologue. Every one of her books has her protagonist delivering one of these things. The one in Atlas Shrugged is absolutely unbearable.
Okay.
She almost crashed the production because she didn't like how Gary Cooper was delivering it. No, I said the, not A. He said A. Yeah,
right. I mean, apparently
it has to be the
tyrant in many ways.
Oh, an absolute madwoman.
I guess there's a documentary about her, and
the idea of Alan Greenspan as a young man literally worshiping at her feet, and we wonder how we got in this mess.
You know, Hillary Clinton got wrapped up in that too. Sad to say, she was part of the kind of Greenspan Randian circle where they talk about these ideas. And I think that's a model, though, for movements in general. Oftentimes, they're just small groups of people in circles sharing ideas. The feminist movement was very much about that. We've got these wonderful documentary D circles developing now. But yeah, Hillary Clinton got caught up. In fact, I know a lot of people who I care about deeply and are intelligent people who get caught up in it. And there have been there's some of Rand's writing, some of her characters, I think there is an intellectual vigor to it at times here and there. So I don't want to be completely dismissive of it.
Let's put it this way. When people who, and you know, lists, oh dear, you know, lists, but people whose livelihoods are based on understanding what constitutes quality in writing, when they put together the list of the top 100 novels of the 20th century,
mm-hmm.
Atlas Shrugged, The Fountainhead, none of that garbage was anywhere to be found.
That's true.
On the popular list, however, it was like sixth.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's sad that this is what, I mean, we're almost all required to read her stuff either in high school or college. And, you know, it's sad that it often just kind of begins and ends there.
I almost failed a class trying to get through that miserable diatribe in college, Preston. And then I think I recounted it on the show a year or more ago. My wife came home from the library, and she loves to pick books out for me in the, you know, because they're going to cut them out, throw them away, whatever. And she says, "Here, I heard you talking about this on the show the other night," and hands me Atlas Shrugged.
Okay.
And I just looked at her and went, "Oh, God, honey, I love you so much. Why did you do this to me? Now I have to read it again." Because I have to read every book she gives me. And I did. But then I would stop at the really juicy, really weird, kinky sex scenes in the book
and read
them to her. And I mean, I remember this one night that Agnes and I, you know, like Mike and Marcia, Mike and Carol Brady, sitting in the bed, you know, reading our books. And I went, "Oh, just put it down, honey. I gotta read you this."
Yeah.
And it's the pseudo literary version of a description of cats having sex.
Yeah.
Transposed on over to people, and like it's really mean, and there's claws and scratching and rawr, and
yeah. It's that domination story again.
Yeah, and poor Agnes is sitting there clutching her sides, weeping, laughing, going and I got done and she looked at me and she said, "Bob Kincaid, don't you ever make a single another snide the demeaning remark about the trashy little bodice rippers that I read, because ain't nothing in there can match any of that." And we all had a good laugh. Hey, Preston, yeah. I've got to roll on. I got a bunch of lines lit up, but
two more sentences, real
sure,
quick.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, I found that Satanism definition. I was looking for it. It's called like Satanism, and I'm not talking about Ozzy Osbourne fans having fun with it and how they see it. This is something else. I think it applies. Symbolic Satanism, sometimes called modern Satanism, is the observance and practice of satanic beliefs, philosophies, and customs. In this interpretation, the Satanist does not worship Satan in the theistic sense, but is an adversary to all spiritual creeds espousing hedonism, materialism, Randian objectivism, antinomianism, which I don't know what that is, rational egoism, individualism, Nietzschean, and some Crowleyan philosophy. I found that interesting.
That is very interesting that they would include it, but it makes sense because, and I love that phrase, anarcho-randianism. It ain't capitalism. Preston, wonderful conversation. Have yourself a great weekend.
You do the same. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye now. Our buddy Preston calling from Denver. We will continue to roll on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Cassie again.
Hey, Cassie.
My phone has shut down twice. It has just, like, shut, hung up on itself.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Bad phone. Bad.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to, like, leave without saying goodbye.
That's quite all
right. Bob?
I'm right here.
Okay.
And we've got phone paranoia now, don't we?
Yeah, a little bit. So I wanted to ask you a question about the economy, but I also want to tell you that we're having this talk in the chat room about socialized medicine and whether everybody should have insurance. And the kid who called you before, his name is Conservakid.
Yes.
Or that's what he called himself.
Yeah, the one night I can't get into our chat room.
Right. He's saying two things that I want to hear what your answer is to them. So the one thing he's saying is that if people have health care and don't pay for it, that they're going to take it for granted and not appreciate it. And then the other thing is about how the biggest problem with insurance companies is that something about state lines and that you can't take it across to the other state. But I said that the biggest problem with the insurance companies is that what they want to do is make money and not cure people and keep.
Okay, don't let me run too far off. Yeah, don't let me run too far off down the garden path on this one, Cassie. I'll try to be as terse as I possibly can. His first statement that people who don't who get insurance for free don't appreciate it. One, the insurance isn't for free. Everybody will be paying for it. All right. Among other things, what won't be happening, however, is that GM won't have to pay for the health care because we would have nationalized health care, and therefore big corporations like GM would actually be more able to compete in that worshipful free market. Okay? One.
Uh-huh.
Two, this idea of people not appreciating something, that just really rings irksome with me, Cassie, because what are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to bow down to the free market? Oh, thank you, free market. The for-profit insurance system was able to remove my gallbladder without killing me at massively inflated costs. Thank you, free market system. Bless you, sir. I mean, is that what's supposed to happen? I mean, I've seen people in hospitals, Cassie, who have had operations, and you know what? Whether they were on Medicare, Medicaid, or for-profit insurance, when the doctor didn't screw up and kill them, they were really grateful.
Yeah.
Okay. This is that same smarmy pump-in talking point. No 11-year-old comes up with this by him or herself. This is the same kind of ditto-headed garbage that you can hear pumped out of Hannity
O'Reilly, Savage, Beck, Flemball, any of those goons, any day of the week. Okay, it's brain poison. Okay, because since right wingers are not known for their individualism or their ability to engage in individual cognition, in other words, they have to have an authoritarian leader to give them their talking points. You can spot it from a mile away because it's been parroted a million times before. Okay, so this idea that somebody wouldn't be grateful for their health care, I mean, what a royalist, what a monarchist, what a revolting piece of anti-democratic goop that is. Yeah,
it gets worse, actually.
Oh, well, what was, but there was a second one, beyond, the not being grateful.
The state lines thingy.
Oh, the state lines thingy. I find that ironic coming from someone who calls himself a conservative, because the heart and soul of conservatism is, of course, states' rights. And what he's talking about is the fact that individual states have individual insurance commissions and regulate their insurance industries within the boundaries of their several states. So if State Farm wants to sell insurance in, say, Mississippi and Alabama, they have to be licensed to sell insurance in Mississippi and Alabama. We could federalize it, but I suspect that would be anti-capitalist in the conservative world, and every insurance lobbyist in the country would descend on Washington in a fit of absolute purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy rage.
Because they've got,
Cassie, is in the 50 several states, insurance commissioners technically come out of the insurance industry, okay? And they are rubber stamps. The insurance commissioner in Alabama is a rubber stamp for the insurance industry in Alabama. The insurance commissioner in West Virginia is a rubber stamp for the insurance industry in West Virginia. The insurance commissioner in Texas is a rubber stamp for the insurance industry in Texas. So that's a bunch of malarkey and baloney, too.
Okay.
But you said it gets worse.
But don't teachers and lawyers and doctors and all of them have to get different licenses when they go in different states?
Sure they do.
So why say that the insurance companies shouldn't, and that's the problem?
Well, because the insurance companies are better than us. The insurance companies are bold paladins of the free market.
Okay. Anyway, so somebody asked him in the chat room, shouldn't everybody have basic health insurance? Shouldn't everybody have the right to see a doctor when they, you know, fall out of a tree or get, you know,
run over by a coal truck? Sure.
Right. And he said, not the lazy people that don't pay taxes.
Oh, somebody's been watching Pastor Hagee. Starve!
I hate that, because, like, I've been paying taxes since I started buying sodas at school when I was, you know, 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Right?
You pay sales taxes? Sure.
And I had a job this week. I worked 4 days this week during the vacation, and I didn't get my check yet, but I'm sure that it has taxes taken out.
It most assuredly does.
They made me fill out a form for the taxes.
Yep. And everybody, and the thing is, even those people, see, the right wing likes to make up boogeymen, okay? They make up these straw men, that's the technical term, and then they knock them down like the big, bold conservatives they are. And the only thing is, the straw men aren't real. They're imaginary. These people who don't work, conservatives don't seem to understand that it is much harder. You have to work much harder when you're poor than you do when you're rich. You have to bust your rear end for every blessed meal. You have to scramble for everything you have. The working poor might have a working automobile. The working poor might have a working automobile, Cassie, but if the transmission drops out of that, they're out of a job because they can't get to work. And then and they're one paycheck away from disaster.
Yeah.
But see, that all of that isn't real to conservatives, because conservatism presupposes a Tinkerbell philosophy where if you don't believe in it, it isn't real. So no matter how close to their little conservative faces the reality gets, they just say it's not real, not seeing it, and they stick their fingers in their ears and they go la 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 la, not hearing.
So if a conservative went to like the free clinic and saw how many people have to wait 7 and 8 and 9 and 10 and 12 hours to get any care at all and all of that stuff, I mean, would
it's their fault for being poor.
Don't deserve.
There's nothing wrong with the system. They don't deserve the health care, and it's their fault for being poor. What it is 21st, it's also 21st century Calvinism. And I'm sure you're familiar with some of Calvinism. Calvinism is a form of so-called Christianity that says that that God has an elect, that there are people on the planet that God likes better than he likes other people, and that the way God manifests his preference for people is by making them wealthy. Okay, this has also been absorbed into and adopted by the right wing. Neo-Calvinism.
Well, that's completely
evil? Crazy?
Well, it is, but it's also not compatible with democracy.
No, it's not. None of Christianity is compatible with democracy. I'm not kidding. It really isn't. You know, we look, you know, St. Paul is all full of, you know, slaves, obey thy masters, subjects, obey thy king, and then there's Jesus, you know, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar and unto God that which is God's, because the Athenian concept of democracy never really made it off of the the Attic Peninsula. By the time the Greeks got to the Middle East and did what was called Hellenizing it, that was done under the reign of Alexander the Great and the subsequent people who broke up and handled the chunks of his empire. And none of them had 10 cents worth of respect for democracy. And neither did the early church. The early church formed as a function of authoritarianism. You know, from stuff even before the Council of Nicaea, but wow, we're way far afield. So I'm going to try to catch a couple of more calls, Cassie. I hope you have a great weekend and a good evening.
Thank you. You too.
All right.
Now we just lost power in the whole house.
Pardon?
Okay. We just lost power in the whole house.
Okay, that stinks. Hopefully it'll blink and come back on.
Everything's dark. Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. Take care, Cassie. Cassie, author of Political Teen Tidbits, FrecklesCassie.wordpress.com. That's the side of youth that gives me a little bit of hope. And let's go back to Ed. Hey, Ed.
Hey, Bob. Thanks for calling back.
Oh, my pleasure.
I had a couple things I wanted to mention, see what you thought. Did you see where that these companies that we loaned the money to, AGI and their affiliates, was $200 million in taxes behind?
Oh, really?
How was that missed? Yeah, how was it missed?
Well, you know, $100 million.
Three investigations going on Wall Street right now.
You know, $100 million here, $100 million there. That's chump change. You lose. Wall Street loses that in the couch every day.
Yeah. Well, they got. I think there's 111 companies involved in it, but I'm just absolutely dumbfounded by that if me or you would miscalculate a little bit on our taxes, how quickly they would be on that.
Like a duck on a June bug.
But yet they can go $200 million unnoticed.
Yeah, because we're playing with trillions now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a minuscule chunk of a billion or a trillion.
Yeah.
You know, we're in an economic hole that's measured in multiple trillions of dollars, largely because of the ugly little war of choice that George Bush started 6 years ago yesterday. But we can't, you know, we got to talk about how we can't afford this bailout because it'll indebt the chirons. Well, what didn't the Iraq war that was done off the books that wasn't even a part of the federal budget, didn't that indebt the children? I seem to recall at one point not too long back, Ed, a statistic, you know, back when George Bush was still murdering the economy, a statistic that his war in Iraq had hung a $4,000 price tag around every newborn in this country.
Yeah. Well, not only that, what the part that gets me the worst is they holler, and oh, I don't like some of the stuff Obama's doing now. It looks like to me he's gone on his back on his word some, but I still support him 100%. Because we don't know what he found out in the meeting that he attended. It looked like when he come out of there that he had the world on his shoulders, that he found out stuff that he totally that was in the dark on before he went into that meeting.
Yeah, you mean like maybe we're keeping two sets of books like the mob?
Yeah, right. Exactly. You know, they explained to him how really, well, you know, the real world, so to speak. And he come out of there, absolutely. I looked at his cheekbones right to the right of his eye, the right of his eyes, and it looked to me like that they were drooped and swollen. And I thought, son, you're just getting a sample of what's really going on. But I wanted to talk to you about. I guess you heard about I was kicked off of the racist pig that runs that show.
No, I didn't hear.
Yeah.
You got to remember, I was gone for a while.
Well, it was yesterday. Mel got in. Mel finally took a stiff-legged position with him, and he got with it, sort of. But then I called in and followed up on it, and we got into it hot and heavy, and I told him some facts, and he put up with it for a while. I got to hand him that. But then I told him, I said, you know, there's one thing I don't have any use for, and that's a man that can't afford his whiskey or his gas or his cigarettes, that has to live off of a woman's wages. He said, that's it. He said, you're through. So this station has told me basically that station had no more room for me.
A little too much truth, Ed.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I told them about their other cronies, too, called in there. And there wasn't no, I told them, and I don't want you to be offended by what I said about Alabama, but I told Williams, who's a nothing but a dope head, he called in and told Steve he had some, I forget what the kind of medicine, but it's illegal to give it away to start with. Oxycontin. And he said, I accused him of graduating from Alabama Insane Asylum. And so he, and like I said, I know you're from Alabama.
That's okay. We've got one. It's right near the University of Alabama. Trust me, I know.
I told him. But anyway, I told him that. Hey, he called in and said that he'd graduated his class. And, of course, I couldn't call back in and give an answer.
Right, yeah, he graduated at the head of the class at the asylum. Whoop!
Yeah, but I wanted to tell you that before somebody else told you, and then you. But the question I want to ask you, and if you don't want to answer it on radio, I'll understand. Can I bring a lawsuit against them through the FCC for banning me on a free talk show?
No,
that I can't.
No,
they can ban me. legally.
Sure, sure. They can do anything they want. The FCC is not going to touch them.
That's too bad. You know, and
but it's not. But Ed, you know, I unless things have changed dramatically, they don't have caller ID. It's not like they can tell who's calling any more than I can tell who's calling.
Yeah, but they got, the minute you pick up, it's just like when, Jeffro and Jim tried to call in there, they know immediately that it's them. How does he know it?
Because he's running on a 7-second delay.
Well, see, I'll never be back, get back on there again.
Well, you know, Ed, I have said for a long, long time, let that man hang on his own petard.
Yeah.
You gotta understand, when you get into a good Donnybrook with him, you're doing him a favor.
Well,
I don't know why you'd. I don't know why anybody'd want to do a man like that a favor.
Well, he taught him and Mel. It's the first time I've heard Mel really stand stiff-legged with him and take him on. And Steve took it. And so when I got on, I said, "Steve, have you gone and smoked your cigarette and settled down yet? Because I don't want lit up." And he said, "I don't know if I have or not." And then I laid into his hind end.
Well, let that. I mean, just friend to friend, Ed. Let that be the end of it.
Oh,
because when nobody calls that man, he doesn't have enough mind or talent to be able to carry a show by himself. That's why he winds up reading the Beckley newspaper to people.
I like to get him just to hassle him.
This is a lesson as regards all right-wing blatherheads. They live for this. Okay? They live for it. You know, I'm doing what I do because I don't live for it. There's no thrill in a screaming match or no joy in a shout fest. You know, we're exchanging information and engaging in conversation here. And you know, I used to have to get into it with those creepy little wing nuts over there. And it was trying and it was tiresome and it was annoying. But I had no choice because that's what was there. I don't have to put up with it anymore.
Yeah. We still need you and Dr. Beal on that program to reach out. Why do you think that West Virginia lost to McCain? It wasn't just all black. Now, I do agree that most of it was due to prejudice.
A lot of it was, but there was a lot of it that's just plain old dumb-headed political stupidity and people voting against their own best interests.
Put out by Steve O'Brien and his Dirty Dozen.
Nah, don't afford... I know what the ratings are at that station, okay? At any given moment on this program, I have orders of magnitude more listeners than he has on his best day there in the fifth smallest radio market in America.
Yeah.
It's the fifth smallest radio market in America.
Yeah.
All right? Don't give him more credit than he's due. Just leave him alone.
Whatever it is too much. But he said on the airs, you know, after I had him mad, he said, "But what you and Wayne want is everybody unionized."
Yeah, and?
And that's right.
Because unions are good for people? Because unions are good for working people?
Huh?
Unions are good for working people? How is this a problem?
And I'll tell you why it's a problem.
Because the right wing and the corporatists thrive on cheap labor. Whatever the policy that is enunciated by a right winger or a Republican is, Ed, if you burrow down to the bottom of it, there's always a basis of cheap labor.
And not only that, when you're organized, you've got something better than what the churches are, because it's like when we used to control this county when the oil, chemical, atomic workers, the UAW, and the food store workers all got together, and we endorsed basically the same candidates and controlled the county, and they will never let that happen again. Not number one, we don't have the base for it. We don't have the
Well, and there was a great deal more prosperity as well. Ed, I've got to roll along. We're at the top of the hour, and it's time for me to close up shop for the weekend.
Well, and daggone it is, isn't it?
It sure
well,
is.
I really enjoyed your program, except for that little daddy's boy that got on there. And I would just appreciate you, that's all.
Well, thank you, Ed. We'll talk to you soon. Have a great weekend.
All right, and you too.
All right, bye now.
Bye.
Well, I've still got a bunch of lights blinking, and I apologize for that, but I'm not going to go extra innings tonight. I apologize, but I'm just going to, frankly, I'm going to have my weekend, and I've been kind of talking a little bit to Agnes about maybe us going out, and because she's been cooped up, and I've been away, and maybe go get a hamburger somewhere and just remember that, you know, we're us. But thank you to everybody who participated this evening. Thank you for your calls, your emails. I'm sorry some of you got frustrated this evening. But I won't run a caller. I will not run a caller. And we are committed to conversation radio here. So, you know, that's where that is. Thank you to everybody who stepped up and continued your support of the horn in every way that you do. We made it up over $1,000 this month for the first time in a long time. We're a long way from two, but we're over 1,000, and that's a step in the right direction. Thank you. Thank you to Peter Godbold, our IT consultant, who gave me some ideas about why maybe this main production computer doesn't have any internet on it anymore. I'm going to spend some time finding that out this weekend, too. Oh, joy. Thank you to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, whiterosesociety.org, literally a clearinghouse for all for the very best of liberal talk on the internet since 2002 and the reason there's still liberal talk in America, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, musician, web designer, everything extraordinaire. And with him being back and up and about, I suspect there will be an all foxed up come Sunday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time.